5, 4, 3.
Welcome to Working Musicians, a feature of theworkingmusician.com. I'm your host, Roger Z. Glad to be here as always. Spring is upon us, and I'm about to spring on you, Andy Toomey. Hey, Andy.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Roger. Nice having you.
You haven't had me yet.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. That was a dream. My bad.
Okay. So, you're with the Gear Jammers.
I am.
Tell me a little bit about the band.
The Gear Jammers band is myself playing guitar and singing. Rick Lubell plays bass. He's also with Not Dead Yet, the Grateful Dead tribute.
Oh, really?
They just had the cover of Westchester, the Journal News, Entertainment
cool.
Magazine, and Pete Rohn, the drummer for Gravity Crush. They've done a lot of big shows, opening for like Whitesnake and some... You know, they're playing all over. But I get to have these great players come play, back me up, doing my blues and rock and roll thing that I do.
I checked out your website today, which is www.thegearjammersband.com.
Well, you know, it is kind of a long name, but, you know, it was available. Some of the other permutations of that were taken by various other...
I saw on TV last night they have a new suffix at the end, .mu, because they were promoting a band that was something .mu.
Well, that's interesting.
But the thing is, no one will ever remember it. Everybody will go to your bandname.com.
You know, people are still getting used to .net and .org, so I don't know how, you know, how well that's going
to
work.
So I went to your website. You've got a long list of tunes that you do.
That's true.
So I saw some Stevie Ray... Tell us some of the kinds of material.
You know, Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix are big influences on me. I've always loved their music. And so, you know, the greatest form of flattery, right, is imitation. So I do a lot of those tunes. You know, I like the blues. I like rock and roll, New Orleans style, a lot of different things. We mix in... you know, pop tunes and...
Name some artists that you cover.
We cover two different Randy Newman songs, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, we do a
Keep
version
your
of
hat on.
Leave Your Hat On. Yeah, but Joe Cocker stole it, so I figured I'd steal it back. So we do our own version of that, and we also do It's Money That I Love, which is another fun tune.
You don't do Short People?
We don't, no.
Name some other artists that you cover.
What other artists do we cover? We do some Tom Petty. We do some Blues Brothers tunes. We do the Blues Brothers version of She Caught the Katie. What else? God, we do so many different things. It always, it's really, we do some Stevie Wonder. We do whatever comes to mind, you know, whatever I'm feeling at that moment.
She Caught the Katie. I always remember it from the first Taj Mahal album.
Which I've never even heard that version. I don't
oh, really? You ought to pick up that album if you can get a hold of it.
I'm a fan. I've seen him play a couple times, and he's great.
So do you play as a three-piece or a four-piece?
We play as a three-piece primarily because it's hard. You know, as a working musician, you know, everybody wants to get paid, and everybody wants as much as they can get. And even more importantly, I mean, getting three people together at the same time is like... pulling teeth, you know. When he is, oh, you have rehearsal, or you have your wife, your girlfriend, your whatever it is you've got. Getting three people together, you know, often enough where it's like, oh, we can do it. That's so hard. Getting that fourth person, you know. Ideally, I'd love to have a keyboard player who doubled on sax, you know, in the band.
Instead of a bass player or...
In addition to the... Yeah, the keyboard player does it with his left hand.
Yeah, yep. I feel your pain. I go through it. All the time, the best musicians, hard to get them on a Saturday night.
Always.
When they can make a $350, $400 mm-hmm. gig. And most guys are not shy about calling you the last minute and saying, what can I do?
Yeah, right. I tell players when if they're going to play with me, they need to have a sub. Because other things happen too. People get sick. Stuff happens.
Good idea.
You know, and I request that the people that play with me, you know, have somebody...
Ready to go.
Who at least knows or can play in the style, at least knows, you know, a substantial... And I do a lot of things that are fairly standard. So, you know, it's not rocket science to have that kind of thing, you know.
I find that a three-piece band is fairly difficult. It's like a three-legged stool. If one of the legs is a little off, it's a lot worse than if it was a four-legged chair and one of the legs is off.
Yeah, that is a challenge at times. Although, as I said, I'm playing right now with some real great players, and so they carry me pretty well. When I'm the weak leg, which I sometimes am.
So what's your main axe?
I play a 86 reissue of a... No, I've got this backwards. An 82 reissue of a 56 Fender Strat, black with a white pickguard. It's looks the same as the Clapton Blackie guitar.
You know, I was reading today about Neil Young. You always see him in his videos and stuff with that black Les Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a gold top that someone just like...
painted black.
Did a terrible paint job on it. And, you know, I always loved his tone. And what he did is I think he took out the rhythm pickup and he put a Firebird mini humbucker in there. And that's how he gets his great sound.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like Blackie by Eric Clapton. I mean, he basically put that guitar together from parts of three different guitars, and then his roadies did guitar mm-hmm. techs.
That was true of Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar, actually. That beat up Strat that you always see him playing was like a, you know, 59 pickups and a 62 body with like a 70 neck or something like that.
You know, you made it when they interview your guitar tech.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And actually, the funniest story is Bob Dylan actually promoted his guitar tech into the band when the lead guitarist left. And after a year, he went to Bob and he said, "Man, it's too much work. I just want to do your guitars. Hire someone else to play."
Yeah, I can relate to that.
So that's interesting. How did you? What's so good about a copy of a 56 Strat? What was so good?
You
about
know,
that
actually, it's you know when I. For many years, I was not a purist about the equipment that I had. I figured, you know what, it doesn't really matter, right? It's an Ibanez, it's a whatever it is, it's in your fingers. But after a long time, you know, I said, you know what, well, a lot of my friends who were great players also were telling me, look, man, buy a Fender. Why are you going to spend, you know, $500 or $600 on an Ibanez, which, you know, 5 minutes after you take it out of the case...
It'll be worth nothing.
You know what I mean? Or it's like, at least if you buy a Fender made in the USA, in 20 or 30 years from now, you'll still have it, and it'll be worth more than it's worth now. Or at least as much, you know, assuming you don't light it on fire and smash it to pieces in, you know, a moment of insanity.
Well, I don't know. You're saying Ibanezes don't appreciate in value?
Not in my experience.
Okay. I take your word for it.
And not to pick on them in particular, but, you know, Fender and Gibson are, you know, American brands for American rock and roll. And I think there's a certain, to my surprise, I felt that they were superior quality.
But to get back to my question, well, I'm not going to let you off the hook.
Oh.
I mean...
Oh, what was special about that guitar?
Because Fender, I mean, you know, what they do now is they realize that a lot of their models never sold. So what they did is, well, this model sells, let's make 50,000 different versions of the Strat.
Right.
And every year I get their catalog from Sam Ash, and I go through it, and here's the Deluxe, the Semi-Deluxe.
The Tex-Max, the Jet Black version, the
right.
so-and-so
version.
So
why did you pick this particular version, or was it just dumb luck? You went in the store, and you pulled it off the rack, and you liked it.
I actually was trying a lot of different guitars, and they just weren't hitting me. And I happened to... You know, look through the want ads, thinking, well, you know, maybe somebody's getting rid of one. They're changing to, you know, some other guitar, and they want. And sure enough, I met this guy in Jersey who was selling this particular guitar. He was a jazz player, and he had bought a, you know, a jazz guitar, an ES-335 or something like that. He had
sure.
a hollow body, and he said, you know, I love this Strat, but it just sits in the case. It's been sitting in the case. You know, it needs love, and I need, you know, the money. So I played it, and I was like, you know, and at that moment, it was just like, the price was right, and the guitar was right, and the timing was right, and so I got it.
Did you play it through an amp? Did you play it through your rig when you tried it out, or you just at his house? And
I was at his house, and he had I can't even remember. I think he had something like a Fender Twin or something like that. Something pretty standard.
Fender Twin's hard to get a good sound out of because it's so big, so loud.
That's true.
You got to dial the master volume up. I mean, you got to dial the master volume down to like 2 and put the volume on like,
That's definitely a problem, yes.
Yeah, it's just so funny because all the Fender amps now go to 12. Did they used to do that, or was that just because of Spinal Tap?
You know, I don't know. I actually use Marshall amps. I have a Marshall 12s. And that was another one of those situations where, and I got it at East Coast Music, actually, in Danbury. And they were having a sale, and it was this one on the floor that they had, and I happened to be there having, I don't know, I was doing something, and I was like, oh, gee, you know, and because I don't even remember, I've had so many different kinds of amps and guitars. I mean, I have all the gear that you might imagine somebody who's been playing for 25 years might have accumulated.
See, mine just kind of, they pass through me. I have them, I sell them, get new ones.
Yeah, right.
But I'm pretty much, so you pretty much play that one guitar every gig, or do you bring two guitars to the gig? Or
I just recently actually bought a brand new Strat, because I was looking for one of the 70s-style ones. I like the bigger headstocks that they have, you know, and I really wanted the clear finish with a white pickguard.
Right.
You know, it just had a certain look that appealed to me. And, you know, and I was looking at some of the ones from the 70s. They were selling like a 73 or a 74. And they wanted like $4,000 for these guitars. And these particular ones, I found that Fender seemed to be, seemed to vary pretty widely in the quality. I don't know if it was what the guy had for lunch or whatever, but, you know, you pick one up and it's like, wow, this is amazing, you know, and you pick another one up and it's just average.
Like they used to say, never buy an American-made car that was made on a Monday,
that's right,
or
that's
a Friday, because
exactly.
They used to pay him on Thursday.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but anyway, so they weren't knocking me out, and as I was walking out of the store, I happened to see a new one hanging on the wall, and it was a 70s-style Strat, they call
it,
you know, yeah. And so I pulled it off the shelf, and it just, again, it spoke to me. I said, you know what, this guitar is great. And
so you bring them both to the gig?
I do, because, you know, I don't like to fiddle around, and I don't break very many strings, but when I do, and I just keep, you know.
Do you put them on a guitar rack?
I usually leave the second guitar in the case right next to me.
I'm always just so paranoid that someone's going to steal one of my guitars.
Yeah, I try and keep I have a pretty simple rig. I have the two guitars, the amp. I use a Morley Bad Horsey Wah.
How do you like that?
I do, and I like it really well. And the thing I like the best about it is, you know, for years I used the Dunlop, the Crybaby Wahs.
Yeah.
And they have a switch. I'm not exactly sure. It's something like a mechanical switch that when you press on it, it makes a big click. And if you're really getting down on the wah, occasionally you can turn it off without meaning to. I think you probably know what I'm talking about if you've used a wah like that. But anyway, this particular wah is off, and if you touch the pedal, it's in the mechanism. So if you touch the pedal, it's just on. And you use it, and when you let it go, it's off. There's no physical switch. And I really like that because it lets me use it occasionally in subtle ways, and there's no big, you know, change. And it's not like, pow, I have a wah on, and pow, it's off, you know.
Do you have, you know, when I first played a wah-wah in the 60s, I guess the original one, the Vox, when it was off, it was a volume pedal. But they don't seem to do that anymore.
That's a great idea.
They took the volume pedal out. I mean, it used to. So, actually, I've been back in the market for a while. While I had the Crybaby, and I just hated it. It just sounded so distorted.
Yeah, they had problems, those wahs, for some
and
reason.
I got a Vox, and I just love the sound. It has a broader range.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're getting kind of technical.
Right.
You also play the bass.
I do. I play upright bass. In fact, for many years, I played upright bass in the Andy Toomey Trio. I'm a big fan of Bill Evans, and I love that kind of jazz. And for some reason, I don't really have the feel for jazz guitar. There's a certain... I mean, I'm really a blues player. I'm a blues and a rock guitar player. But for some reason, when I play jazz, I like to play the bass. There's a short story. When I first moved to New York, I was looking for gigs, and, you know, bass player wanted, and so I went and met this woman who was doing the one gig, the reception for the New York Marathon. Okay, and I went to their house for one rehearsal, and there was this upright bass in the corner. It had about a quarter of an inch of dust on it. It hadn't moved or been touched in years, you could tell. And I was like, why is that there? Why is that so unloved? And she said, and I quote, oh, that old thing? Our parents nicked it. My father nicked it for us when we were kids, when he was a music teacher, you know, 30 years ago. You want it? I said, yeah, I'll take it off your hands, you know. So, of course, I immediately had it appraised, and it was worth like $4,000. It was, you know, Jusek bass made by hand in Poland in 1968. And I took that as a sign from God, you should play jazz. You know?
Did you throw her any money at all?
She didn't ask, and I mean, I said, well, hey, you know, what do you want for it? Because that's when I, you know, when she said, whatever, you know, take it. Get it out of my basement. So,
you know, it's funny.
So if you're watching this, thank you.
It's funny because I used to lead a trio on bass, and now I lead it on guitar, and I just find that leading it on guitar, you color, you're able to give the songs more color. You feeling relaxed now? Kinda?
I think so. It's relaxed as I ever get.
Okay, why don't you pick up the guitar, my Ibanez guitar, which I'm sure will be worth nothing in a couple of years.
Well, the acoustics are a little bit different. You know, the electric guitars, I think.
So tell us what song you're going to play. And
This is the first song that's on the website, and it's called All On You. I'm recording over in Bronxville at the Loft.
Okay.
With a great guy named Crawford Brown who's doing the engineering for me. So we went in and recorded an album. I'm in the process of mixing it. I'm about halfway done. And this is, you know, one of the first songs that kind of came out.
Cool.
You got the money, I got the time, I got the feeling, honey, we'll be doing fine. Yes, it's true, I had a thing for you, but I won't take the blame, so it's all on you. Turn up the music, no one's around. I got the feeling, honey, we'll be going down. Yes, it's true, of rhythm section there during the leads, but you know, during generally a lot of my songs, you know, have a space, if you will, for instrumental sections, and so whatever sort of comes out, we tend to stretch out, and improvise, you know, sort of, there's always a cue, you know, you give them the nod, okay, we're coming back into the verse.
So you mean...
hairy eyeball.
So on that song, would you stick to the verse form when you solo, or you're just going to hang on one chord and do...
No, we definitely stick to the verse, you know, sort of the verse-chorus form, if you will.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll take two or three choruses in the middle and, you know, and maybe at the end.
Now, you're a graduate of SUNY Purchase?
Yeah, I got my master's degree in studio composition from SUNY Purchase. I studied with Jim McElwain, Joe Ferry, and...
Joe Ferry.
Yeah, he's great. In fact, some of my... I got to meet Noel Redding and hang out with him because...
Jimi Hendrix's bass player.
Yeah, he happened to be friends with Joe, and Joe had brought him in to talk to the class that I was taking. And I sort of caught up to him afterwards and talked to him at some length about what it was like to play with Jimi Hendrix and what he was like. And to nobody's surprise, you know, Noel said he was just the greatest guy, very laid back and not at all.
Because they had their differences.
Yeah, well, I think it was all, you know, what he was saying was basically it was about the money. You know, Noel was saying, we're selling millions of records and making millions of dollars, and where is the money?
Well,
and Jimmy didn't really care. He was like, yeah, man, you know, we're playing for big crowds, we're getting, you know, having a good time, what are you worried about?
Their manager was like a spook. He was like a CIA guy, and I think he just stole all the money.
Yeah, a lot of that. Well, and in fact now, many years later, the rights have returned to the Hendrix family, and boy, have they done the right thing with the money, you know, doing Experience Hendrix out in Seattle, and, you know, I mean, 40 years later now, and change, his music to me is still as, you know, people, little kids still know who he is. You know, I think Jimi Hendrix will be around for a long, long time. Maybe not as long as Keith Richards, but...
Well, you know, I read an interview with Ron Wood. No, I want you to play another one. Ron Wood was saying that he's straight now. He's not drinking, not doing anything.
I am too, by the way. After 25 years, I've had about a year now.
Good for you.
Which I highly recommend, because I woke up one morning and said, God, when was the last time I didn't have a hangover? You know, and I thought, maybe that's a bad sign. And I've noticed that my playing and my overall attitude has really improved. And so I recommend that. Not to preach or anything, but
okay.
You brought it up.
We got 4 minutes, so I need you to do a quick song for us.
Okay. This started out as something called My Lord, and I wanted it to be a gospel thing. But the more I kind of went with the lyrics, I just couldn't find anything that was really working. So it ended up being called The Coldest Thing.
Okay.
My baby.
Okay, quickly. Your favorite CDs. If you had to take two or three to a desert island, what would you bring?
You know, I would bring a CD player.
Okay.
And plenty of batteries. And really, any Hendrix, like box set, any Stevie Ray box set. I'm a big Rush fan, which is kind of not really on the same thing, but lyrically and musically, they were a big influence on me starting to play.
Does Rush have any female fans?
No. Very few. Very few. I know one, actually, but they're very rare. I don't know why that is. But even more importantly than a CD, I'd rather have a guitar and plenty of strings, because I can make my own music and play the songs I want to hear.
Andy, your dream band, people living and dead. You're going to play the Garden. You can do two sets. You can have as many people as you want on stage. Quickly, who would you bring with you?
You know, I thought about this a lot. Okay, the drummer, Manu Katché. Played with Peter Gabriel.
Okay.
Very, very good drummer.
And
super rock solid. Yes. Mm-hmm. And also Tori Amos. Bass player, George Porter Jr. from the Funky Meters.
Okay.
And he played with Manu Katché on a song by Tori Amos called Tallulah that I'm very fond of. And I thought they were a great rhythm section. Reese Winans, keyboard player for Stevie Ray Vaughan. And also Delbert McClinton.
Delbert's one of my favorites.
I love his music. Also, the Blues Brothers horn section. Blue Lou Marini, Tom Bones Malone, Mr. Fabulous on trumpet. You know, you got to have these guys.
So that's your first set. Who would you bring up for your second set? You wouldn't bring back Jimmy to maybe like
know,
do a duel
well,
or Stevie?
Oh, yeah. I really want to get on stage with those guys, get myself blown off the stage. But actually, you know, there's a great band up in heaven. You know, they're doing
rock
their
and
thing,
roll heaven.
And I will see them there, I hope.
Andy, thank you so much for coming down.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.